Let me summarize very briefly last week the ideas that were presented in last week's shiur. What's important to remember, or rather, what have we covered until now? In order to, that shouldn't get confusing. What have we covered until now? First, we went through the idea of Adam v'Kayan, and demonstrated the idea of the concept of Mashiach in Adam, and that's how it really began, and then also Kayan. Then again, after that, we went into the idea of Yosef and Yehuda, and again how you see the continuation of the theme of Mashiachim. Then after that, we went into the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu and Mitzrayim, the Jews of Mitzrayim. Again, you see the continuation of the idea of the fundamental tasks, the Mashiachim. Then I began speaking about what is the structure of the Mashiach in Nuchnistic terms. And I had gone to explain on that. And that, of course, enables, it sheds light on a lot of different events once you understand the structure spiritually of what's happening with the Mashiach. One can understand a lot of different ideas in Tanakh. And then last week, what I had gone into is the interpretation of history, the phenomena of history, the events of history, as nothing more than that which is based on two different ideas. This is what I had gone into last week. In other words, I had gone into the idea, and this is, I just want to offer as a short summary in terms of last week's shiur, that there are basically two determining principles that determine the course of events. It determines human history. The first idea is that every event expresses the gilui or the hester, the amount of gilui yichudoi of the Ribbono Shel Olam nebriya, or its opposite, the amount of concealment or hester yichudoi of the Ribbono Shel Olam nebriya. And that, of course, depends on the mitzvahs and the chatoim of the Jews. Therefore, history always reflects that changing status, that status of how much gilui and hester is there as a result of the mitzvahs and the or the chatoim of Jews. The second fundamental principle is that all events, at the same time that they're expressing the status or the state of Hester and Gilui, is also stating another idea. And that is the idea of the two tikkunim, which I had mentioned. The two ideas, the two tasks, and of the fact that, in other words, all history expresses these two ideas and how they are to be fulfilled by the Jews. Since the Jews are the nation selected, which I'll go into today much more in depth, to be involved with being masakin, the chet of Adam Rishon, which is a kilkel, and the original chesaron of Adam Rishon, which is what he was born into. The Jews were the people chosen to actually correct those two situations. Therefore, history is always involved in giving them at any historical point the ability to masakin those two inyanim, as well as their own contributions to chet, which Jews keep always, unfortunately, adding to. Jews, unfortunately, do chet. So therefore, history gets worse and worse in terms of more hester, which means more evil and so on. So therefore, Jews not only have to massacre the inyanim of Adam, but also the contributions that they keep making as a result of the chatoim. So therefore, we see that history is determined by two fundamental ideas, and I cannot overemphasize the importance of what I'm saying now, that all history can be understood in terms of how it reflects the amount of hester and gilu in the universe because of the mitzvahs of Jews or chatoim of Jews. And again, that history must, every historical event has the proper situation or opportunity for the Jews to be masakin the different inyonim, the two inyonim that have originated from Adam Rishon, as well as also being masakin their contributions to hester, which is their own chatoim. Every hester means concealment.
You have to, yeah.
Now, So therefore, those are the two fundamental ideas, that all history reflects the Gilui or Hester, A, and B, that every stage of history must have a situation where the Jews can masakin the different inyonim of Adam and their own contributions to the Chet. And therefore, history allows them to have those tikkunim. Okay? Those are the two fundamental ideas in history. Like I said before, I can't overemphasize the importance of those two principles. Now, in order to masakin the inyonim, okay, I had mentioned that the first of the inyonim is to be mispashit kedusha, to spread holiness throughout. Okay? And I'll explain that in more detail. The second was to subjugate the Yetzirah, the Sitra Achra, under Kedusha. It means to subjugate him, make him a tool for Kedusha. Don't allow him to win. Okay? Now, this idea, the second idea, which is called Kfiyas Hora, Kfiyas HaSitra Achra, the subjugation, okay, the domination, the subjugation of the Sitra Achra, its basic purpose is realized in basically one of three ways. How does the Jews subjugate the Sitra Achra? How does that happen? In other words, how is that second tikkun of Adam Rishon done? It's done basically in one of three ways. The first way is that when the Jews are in within these klippas, within the goyim, and these goyim are generally the representative of the Sitra Achra because they do exactly what the Sitra Achra wants them to do because that's what they freely choose. So therefore, they are a tool in his hands. So therefore, when Jews are in living among the goyim, and this is exactly what's been happening for the last 2,000 years, that's why the second tikkun is almost outweigh the first tikkun of Hispashas HaKedusha. That will take place really in Yemei HaMashiach. But right now, for the last 2,000 years, we've been trying to correct the power given to the Sitra Achra as a result of Adam Rishon's Chet, as well as all the Chatoim of the Eden. So therefore, that is generally done, this Kfiyas Ra is generally done in one of three ways. That a Jew has to try to remain a tzaddik under the goyim, maintain his tzidkus. Therefore, Chabakuk says, tzaddik be'emunoso yichyeh, that a righteous man will live by his emunah, that even if the evil gets so great, has such great domination, where you don't even see any kedusha anymore, you have to remain from in your emunah. The second way of the second idea of how Kfiyas Ra works is that the Jews suffer at the hands of a goy. That's the second way. So therefore, what a Jew does when he suffers at the hands of a goy is that all the power given to the Sitra Achra, and therefore which gives the power of the goy to subjugate the Jews, is dissipated. Because once you give him the power, that's it. So what else does he want? I mean, you've given him what his due is. He's done it. He's put Yisurin to Yidin, which is, of course, the Einish of that's Hesti Yehudah, as I had mentioned previously. So then what else does he want? So therefore, you dissipate his strength by suffering at his hands. So therefore, the second way of being Kfiyas Ra, subjugating evil, is to suffer at the hands of evil until you've dissipated all his power. So that's the second way. And the third way, of course, of the dissipation is the fact that evil itself proliferates more and more. So again, it dissipates its power because that's what he gets as a result of Chatoim of Adam and of the Jews. So therefore, the fact that there's such a tigbiris hurrah, a proliferation of evil throughout the Bria, again dissipates his power. Now, just to make a comment about the Yisurin, once we understand that Jews suffering Yisurin is part of the second tikkun of Kfiyas Ra, and this has been going on for the last 2,000 years, we can understand now that the Rebbeinu Shlom wants, apparently, to speed up the Geula, to speed up the Messianic process. So what he's done is he's taken the Jews and he's given the Yisurim, which are incredible, and that, of course, is the Holocaust. That the Holocaust is the second tikkun in an incredibly short amount of time. And unfortunately, it of course, is the aftermath is, of course, horrendous in that way. But the second tikkun of Kfiyas Ra, that's the way you take away the power of the Sitra Achra, by suffering at his hands. Unfortunately, of course, that is really what the Holocaust has been. So the Rosh Hashanah took the Yisurin, which is really the way Jews are being mechapa, or rather the way the being masak in that kfir sarah is through yisur. And he took the yisur that perhaps should have been spread over 100 years or 200 years, and he put it in 6 short years or whatever. And therefore, the tremendous yisur that the Jews have gone through as a result of the Holocaust has been an incredible tikkun for the whole idea of kfir sarah. That's the toiv that has come out of it. Unfortunately, the Jews, of course, are masaking it through their own yisur. And the reason why they are, if you recall, that the Rebbe Hashem has given 3 ways for a man to get Olam Haba, which means that he's given 3 ways to be Megala Yehudai. One is mitzvahs, second is tshuva, and the third is yisurin. If a person does mitzvahs, great. If he doesn't do mitzvahs, then the Rebbe Hashem has given another way, tshuva. If he does tshuva, he can still get Olam Haba because that's still Gili Yehudai. What happens if he does neither? Then the Rebbe Hashem gives him yisurin. And that's a third way of getting Olam Haba. And I discussed a long time ago how Yisurin is Megali Yehudai. But in any case, Yisurin is the last method and the least desirable method in terms of what the Rebbe Hashem wants. However, it is a method that works, Yisurin. So therefore, in the second tikkun of Kfir Sarah, either you remain at Tzaddik, which is what? The first two, Mitzvah Satshuva. And if you don't remain at Tzaddik, then the second way is, or the third way is, Yisurin. So in other words, Kfir Sarah itself has 3 ways. Either do mitzvahs and tshuva in among the, within the goyim, which means that you maintain your tzidkus through tshuva or through mitzvahs and tshuva. That's a desirable way of taking away the power of the sitra akra. And if you don't do that, then you have to use a third mechanism in the second tikkun. The third mechanism is yisurin in the second tikkun, which is kfir sarah. So therefore, unfortunately, that's what the basic method the Jews have been doing for the last 2,000 years is going from one country to the other in terms of expulsions and pogroms and so on. They have also been doing the second, the other method of tzaddik, the mitzvahs and tshuva, because Klai Yisrael has been doing a tremendous amount of tzidkus also, even though they've gone through all the goyim, they have never forsaken the Torah and so on. However, unfortunately, the Yisurin has also been a method which has been always with the Jews. And Yisurin is the tikkun of the Yisurin is the third method which the Jews use as a tikkun of the in order to masaken the second tikkun, which is subjugate the evil. Therefore, and the Holocaust, just as an example, is one of the very significant ways of how the Yisurin of the Eden has been masaken the Indian of Kfir Sarah, which is the second task of man. Now, this is basically the idea of history, once you understand the process of Mashiach. In other words, what we realize now is a very interesting idea. And again, I cannot overemphasize. History is nothing more than the ongoing attempt at man to masaken the ideas or the two ideas in Adam Rishon, plus his own contributions to the Kilkel. That's all it is. That's all the Rebbe Hashem wants. The entire history is nothing more than to give man, originally it was Adam, and now it's Yidden. They are the ones who have the tikkunim, not everybody else, which I'll go into later. So therefore, history is nothing more than the attempt to furnish man the framework by which he can masaken everything in the Bria, the chassan of Adam and the kilkel of Adam, plus the kilkel of the Jews' own contribution. And all history is that kind of an image. And if you look at Jewish history that way, you mamish can figure out and see the turn of events as the entire era of course, the entire ongoings of Jewish history. So therefore we see that the Mashiachin, Mashiach ben Yosef, which is what? Or Mashiach ben David, which is involved in the idea of Hispashtus Kedusha, to spread holiness throughout. And the Mashiach ben Yosef, who is involved in the Kfir Sarah, that these two individuals really present two different ideas, two different tikkunim, which goes throughout the Bria. That's the idea. That is the fundamental ideas in the Bria, what the Rebbe wants. Those are the fundamental tasks of the Jews. And it's done through mitzvahs, tshuva, and yisurin. And the task is either to be mespasha kedusha, or to be kofa the ra, tachas kedusha. This is the entire idea in a very succinct summary. You know, it's, I hope it's understood or appreciated the significance of this entire summary in terms of what it really means. It's the clue, it's the key to understanding the entire 6,000 years of man's history. In other words, this is the internal design of history. That's really what it is. So it will be very profitable, of course, for everybody to go into history and now look at it this way. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I've gone through Adam and Cain. I've gone through Yosef and Yehuda. I've gone through Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jews in Mitzrayim. And we see, lo and behold, these two tikkunim keep going. Okay? Right now what I'm going to do is begin the next topic. Again, the Shtauschluss, the evolution or the continuity of this idea throughout history. And I'm going to backtrack a little and go into the entire idea of the Ovos. The Ovos. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And especially I'm going to dwell on Yaakov and Esav. What is Yaakov and Esav all, really all about? And most people have no understanding. It's learned in a very superficial way. Well, in general, Torah is learned in a very superficial way. But the idea of the internal design of what's really going on in terms of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Yaakov and Esav and the 12 Shvatim, this is what I want to go into next. This is what I'm going to devote this year and until I finish these ideas. And then after, I'm going to skip and go into the next stage of history, which is, of course, is Rechavam and Yeravam, Shlom HaMelech. And then I'm just going to continue down until we get to Rabbi Akiva and then into the next 2,000 years. So in effect, what I'm doing for you is actually demonstrating to you how these ideas go through the entire 6,000 years of history. And I'm merely giving to you in a very general way. Of course, hopefully, people will themselves will go back into the Chumash having this internal design, having these keys, and you'll be able to see the incredible beauty of Chumash, Torah, as Mamash the Psukim show you, which I will be demonstrating as we go on. Now, let's go back now into the Ovos, because that's really where we're up to. We're now into the idea of the Ovos. And the question, of course, is, what is this all about? Why are there no Jews, or rather, why are there no Goyim, and there's only Jews? What is the significance of the Jews, and what does it mean by to be a Jew, and what does it mean to be a Goy? What is really all these ideas really all about? And how do we understand it in terms of the actual course of events as we see in Torah itself? And how do you see it, mamish in the psukim, where you can look at the pasuk on one level and it's one story, which is usually, of course, the way people learn, and then you look at another level and it's a completely different story, which means that you were learning Chumash apisuid in terms of the secret ideas of what's going on in the Chumash. Now, in order to understand the Ovos, we have to backtrack again to Adam, because in order to get that overview, we have to backtrack to Adam. Now, it's very important to understand that this idea. There's a Medrash that says that, and I had repeated this previously, but now I'm really going to go into the depths of it and so on. The Medrash says that the Rebbe made a Tanai, a condition with the Bria. What was that? He said, if Israel accepts the Torah, mutov, good. If Israel does not accept the Torah, then I'm going to restore the Bria to Toyu Vavoyu. I'm going to bring it back into the chaos that it should have been. Why? Because what is the Rebbe Shem really saying? If there is an individual or individuals, that's what Israel means. Doesn't mean Jews. It means any individual who will make an agreement with me to do my will, and if I will give Moel Mabo, good. Then I'll do that. If not, then the whole universe is not justified. It's not justified in terms of creating it. So therefore, Yisrael means any individual. Yisrael means Yosher Kael, righteous of God, which means an individual who is righteous, who does what the Rebbeinu Shlom wants. Mitzvahs, whatever the Rebbeinu Shlom wants. Ratzon Hashem, that's Yosher Kael. Therefore, if there's an individuals who are Yosher Kael, means that they'll do the will of God, then it was worth creating the universe. That's the whole point of it. That a person should work, labor, and then get a Olam Haba in order to avoid Naam Diksufak. If it doesn't work, then there's no point in the Bria. So then, Mach of the whole world. This is what the Medrash says. What do we see? We see before that the concept Yisrael does not mean Jews. It means an individual or individuals who are righteous. Okay? That's a very important idea to understand. Now, this idea, Yisrael, really devolved on Adam. He was the first man. So he was the first Jew. in quotations. Wasn't a Jew because there was no such thing as a nation different from other nations. All men were supposed to have this. The universal man was Adam. And his task, of course, was to be Yosher Kael, to listen to the tzivoy of the Ribbono Shel. As a result of the fact that he didn't, what happened? So therefore, Yisrael devolved upon who? Adam, right? And what was the task of Adam? One tikkun. What was the tikkun? To mesaken chesaron, which means the original hester that God put into the world. That was the job of Adam, and it, of course, manifests itself in terms of a tree and the Yetzirah and the Nachash and so on, which of course is really this whole Bechina, which I explained before in the ideas of Adam Rishon and in the structure of man psychologically. But in any case, this was Adam's task. This task is called Tikkun of Kedusha, the correction of the amount of holiness besuid in terms of the idea of ispasht, the whole Madrig of Seor, that Adam Rishon was supposed to reveal this Kedusha, which means to reveal the presence of God, Gili Yechudai, right, throughout all its levels, throughout all the universe, and every facet of the universe, he had to reveal this Kedusha. That's Tikkun Kedusha besuid ispasht this Madrig of Seor, to reveal or to masaken the fact that there's a chesar in the Bria, that Kedusha is not here, right? There is no Gili Yechudai. There's a chesaron. He had to misaken that and spread Kedusha, which means Gili Yechudai, throughout the entire Bria. That is what Yisrael should have done. Then he would have been Yosher Kael. Okay? Instead, what he do, and therefore Yisrael also means, besides the fact that Yisrael means Yosher Kael, Yisrael also means, it comes from the word Srora, rulership, rule. What he would have done is he would have ruled over the Sitra Achra, who wanted him not to do that task, and therefore he'd be called Yisrael, the one who rules concerning the Ribbono Shel. He rules concerning the mitzvahs of the Ribbono Shel. And that's really what the Malach called Yaakov. Sariso im Elokim bimanoshim. You contended. You ruled over not over the Ribbono Shel, but you ruled over man in terms of the ideas or the rotzen of the Ribbono Shel. So that's the two meanings of Yisrael. But in any case, Yisrael means was devolved upon Adam, and his task was, the task of Yisrael was Tikkun Kedusha in all its madrigas, to remove the hester, to remove the concealment, which is the original chesaron of the Bria, and instead to be Megal Yechudai throughout the world. This was the task of Adam Harishon. However, since Adam failed, so therefore a new task arose. What was that? That is the, so therefore what happened? Evil became internalized in man. So the idea is to kick evil out, to get it out of the Bria. And you do that by subjugating evil. You subjugate the evil under Kedusha, which means that evil serves Kedusha. And how do you do that? As I mentioned previously and last week, that you become a tzaddik, you maintain your tzidkus in the Sitra Achra, and you use the uniqueness, you recall, of each nation to serve God. The same way the Sitra Achra wants to hide the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is in 70 different ways and represented by 70 different umas, you use that uniqueness to adrab, to be megala Yechudai. And therefore, what that makes, it makes the Sitra Achra impotent. He's powerless. You dissipate his energy. In any case, so the second task of man as a result of the Chet of Adam is called Kfiyas Sitra Achra, the Chol Madrigo Seho, to subjugate the Sitra Achra, the evil, in all its levels, Tachas Kedusha, under Kedusha. Okay, in other words, to take the zoyama of the snake, the poison of the snake, which he put into the Bria, right? The tumor which he put into the Bria, which means the hester of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Bria, that's how it manifests itself, to take that, and to remove it, to remove that hester, that zoyama, or the kilkel, because it's damage, because that's man's contribution to the amount of hester. That's man's damage. So therefore, Kfiya Sitra Achra means to remove the Zoyama, the Tumor, the Kilkel, whatever you want to call it, and therefore, or the Hester, and to restore the Giloy, the way it was before Adam Rishon's Chet, and then to do the first task, to be Mespashet Kedusha, throughout all the levels. Those are the two fundamental ideas in the entire Bria. Okay? And again, we see how it started with Adam. So therefore, what comes out now is that Yisrael now has two jobs. Who's Yisrael? First was Adam with one job. Now Yisrael became all mankind with two jobs. First job was Kfiyas, the Sitra Achra, to subjugate the Sitra Achra, to remain at Tzaddik in the Sitra Achra, right? And of course, if that doesn't work, then you have Yisurin and you have the other backup systems that enable you to be kaif for the Sitra Achra. So since man failed, Yisrael, right, Yoshua Kael, now has two jobs to do both. The Hispashtas HaKedusha and the Kfir Sarah. But who is Yisrael? Yisrael is still all mankind. Therefore, there's still no Jews. Even after Adam is gone, you still have Cain and Hevel, and you have all the people, Noach, everybody. Until we get to Avram. Now, these two ideas, which were taken on by all mankind, is now personified in two shroshim, bi'ika. One is called the Shirish of the Mashiach ben David, and the other is called the Shirish of the Mashiach ben Yosef, which means that the two most significant parts of the neshama of Adam HaRishon was now divided, in the sense that one had to remove the evil, the Kilkel, which is Ben Yosef, and one had to restore the Kedusha in the Bria, which was Ben David. That's the ideas of the two Mashiachim. There are two fundamental sources. That's the tree. The tree itself, in order to keep the work going, can mispash it or go out into many shroshim. Remember the Ruchnistiger, the spiritual structure of the Mashiach? They can, of course, they divide the many shroshim. The tree itself, which is the fundamental stock, the tree, which does these two avodas, and that's Mesaken, the neshama of Adam Rishon, and they themselves give rise to many shroshim, as I mentioned previously. Either you ben Yosef or you ben David, you're into the two different kinds of tikkunim, which affect the neshama of Adam Rishon, from which both emanate, and therefore there's a tikkun to the Bria. Now, besides the asoid of either side, ben Yosef, ben David, besides the shroshim of either side, ben Yosef or ben David, and of course only those, either Yesoid or the Shroshim, can be Mashiach itself, because he's the one who finally wraps up the job. Besides this, Klai Yisrael is also in one of the other tikkunim. Every Jew is either in the category of Ben Yosef or in the category of Ben David. That's where every Jew fits, except he comes from other parts of the neshama of Adam Rishon, but the whole source of the whole job to correct this is from the Shroshim, which from the Yesoidis, the tree, which are the Shroshim, which are the branches, and then you have all the other branches, all the other things coming out of the tree, all the leaves and so on. That's the rest of Klai Yisrael. So therefore, the truth is that all Jews are involved in that Avoida, the Avoida of either Kfiyas, the Sitra Achra, under the Kedusha, which stems from the aspect of the Neshama, the Yesoid and the Shirish of Ben Yosef, so they revolve out of that. Or they're involved in the tikkun of Ben David, which is that Yisoid, no Shroshim, and they're involved in Mispash Kedusha. So it comes out that the task of the Mashiachim, whether it be the Yisoid or the Shirish, and the task of all Klai Yisrael is in one of those two directions. And therefore, of course, history always puts Klai Yisrael, or rather the Rebbein Shalom, always puts Klai Yisrael in one of those two directions. Either you're being Mispash Kedusha by spreading the name of God, by learning Torah and spreading it, Marbet's Torah, and so on, throughout the entire Bria, or you're always contending with evil, in evil, either by being a tzaddik there or by suffering at the hands of evil. You're one or the other. So therefore, all Jews are involved in those two tikkunim, but they all derive their ability to masaken from the original shroshim, which arrives their strength from the two fundamental yesoidis, Ben David or Ben Yosef. And both of these two Yesoidis are embedded in the Neshama of Adam Rishon. See the way it goes? And therefore, this is the structure. Now, before the Jews came along, that idea of the Yesoidis, Ben David Ben Yosef, as well as the Shroshim, as well as the Klai Yisrael, if you want to look at that, was Goyim. There was no such thing as Jews. In other words, everybody was involved in those two Tikkunim. All mankind was involved in those tikkunim. So therefore, you'll always find before Avram that there was always a Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, like I showed you, Cain and Hevel. Okay. Then you'll find also that there were different shoshim. You'll find also, well, not Mashiach, because that would have meant the end of the tikkun. That then therefore the wouldn't be Mashiach. But you'll always find Yesudis and Shoshim, and you'll find that the rest of the people are contending with one of these two ideas. This is the way it should have been. And the world, all mankind, should have then finally been massacring these Nyanim, right? Taken away, dissipated all the power of evil, and therefore Mespashit Kedusha, and then you would have had your Moshe Mashiach. And you know who would have been your Moshe Mashiach? Who would have been the subjects or the true objects of your Moshe Mashiach? Of course, all mankind. That's what should have been. Because they would have been involved in all these both tikkunim of what has to be done as a result of Adam. However, mankind failed. Nobody was doing it. They had Yechidim that was doing it. Very few people. Like Noach was a sheresh in Mashiach ben Yosef, and he failed to influence the generation and so on. You didn't. But the generation itself was not really doing it. You had Shroshim, you had Yesudis, but you didn't really have, or you rather, you just had a Shroshim, but you didn't have anybody really following it. So therefore, the Rebbeinu decided that he's taking it away from mankind because they refused to do it. He's taking away, he waited 20 generations from Adam till Noach, and then from Noach till Avram, and nobody responded to the call of being misakin or contending with evil, not listening to evil, which means on our level, doing the mitzvahs, and stop pandering to evil thoughts and desires, and stop doing chatoim. That's what it means in human level, in terms of the avoda. But in terms of what the avoda is masakin those ideas, and therefore, nobody was listening. Until we come to Avram Avinu. Now, when we get to Avram Avinu, Avram was the first one, really, who began doing it in a tremendous sincerity and a tremendous amount of application of these two ideas. Where do we see that in the life of Avram Avinu? Now, by Avram, what we see happening is that, again, like I say, he was the only one at that time who was really Makkid Rebbeinu Shlom, because he fought. He tried to understand. Now, Avram himself, interestingly enough, did both avodas. What was the both avodas? He did the avodah of the Ben Yosef, because where was he for the first 50 or odd years? In Ur Kasdim. And he was contending with Nimrod, who wanted to throw him into the Kivshan, into the fire. So therefore, what he was doing is, again, remaining a tzaddik, no matter how much evil you'd pour on top of the man, no matter how much you try to kill the man, he was subjugating evil. Okay? So that's the idea, really, of Ben Yosef. That's the union of the tikkun of the chet of Adam Rishon itself. In other words, Ur Kasdim, which represents the klipas, means that was the basic locale of civilization at that time, right? Those are the klipas. In Ur Kasdim, it's Iran. I think it's where Iran is, yeah. His method of being koifer the Sitra Achra, of course, was stand up to Nimrod and all his people there, and to Afa became believe in the Rebbeinu Shlom. This was the idea of, really, Ben Yosef. After he left Ur Kasdim, what was his next job? To spread the idea of the Rebbeinu Shlom throughout the Bria. To be mafalsim the Indian of the Rebbeinu Shlom. That's why it says, Avram made Geram, and Sarah made Geras and so on. Geras and so on. So therefore, what they were trying to do is mespashit Kedusha. That's the idea of who? That's the idea of Ben David. To go throughout the world, then to spread the name of the Rebbeinu Shlom. So we see that Avram was really involved in the Sheresh of Ben Yosef and Ben David. And the truth is that Avram Avinu had both. He was a Sheresh, really, of Ben Yosef, and he was a Sheresh of Ben David. Mainly, he was really involved in both ideas. The Ika, however, of Avram was really Ben David, because he was Chesed. Avram was Chesed, kindness. And Chesed is synonymous with Ben David. Okay? Which I'll explain a little more later. So therefore, the Ikar of Avram, of course, was Chesed, which really means that Avram, in his essence, was really a Shurish of the Mashiach Ben David, to Mefarish, to Rebbeinu Shlom, throughout the Bria. But he also had some of the category of Ben Yosef. And that's exactly what he was doing. Now, once he did that, what did the Ribbono Shel'olam do? He said, ah, you're actually doing my work. Therefore, with you, I will make a covenant, a bris ben absarim. And that's what that is the significance of the bris ben absarim, is that the Ribbono Shel'olam now makes a covenant, agreement with Avram, that you will be mesaken those in Yonim, A. B, that your children will be mesaken those in Yonim, and C, that only your descendants can mesaken, no more Goyim. The Ribbono Shel'olam took it away from the Goyim, and he gave it to Avram and his descendants to mesaken those two in Yonim, which again is the major task of all mankind. In other words, the idea of a tikkun of the chassan and the kilkel is now goes only to his descendants. Now, why did the Ribbono Shel'olam make a bris with Avram? There were other tzaddikim in Avram's time, Malki Tzedek, Noach. There were other, although Ribbono Shel'olam made a bris with Noach and so on, but there were Shem Be'eva. There were other tzaddikim in the time of Avram who were also doing these ideas, misakin these tikkunim. Why did he make it only with Avram? And the answer to that is because only Avram, the Ribbono Shel'olam felt that only in Avram would he make sure that his descendants would do it also. That's why. And then the Ribbono Shel'olam reveals that idea when he says, Leman, because Avram will give it to his children after him, that's why I'm going to make a bris with him. Truth is, he could have made a bris with others. But what the Ribbono Shel'olam wanted is not only the individual to misakin, because it needs more than just Avram, as we see clearly that it needed until the Jews in Egypt. So he wanted an individual who would make sure that his descendants would also do it. And apparently nobody met that test, only Avram. So he said, Avram, I told Avram, bris ben absarim, therefore you are now the tikkunim of the bria, rests in you, which means that that's the contract. You do my avoda, which is the tikkunim, right? Kfir Sarah, after the chet of Adam Rishon, and also his pashtas HaKedusha, which is what Adam Rishon should have done. That task is now only to you, to your descendants, and to nobody else. Therefore, so we see therefore that the name Yisrael went on who? On Avram Avinu. No more did the name Yisrael go on the Umas Olam. The name Yisrael now goes only on Avram Avinu. But he was not called Yisrael. That remained for Yaakov, which we'll see. However, so then what, besides the bris ben absarim, the name must change to indicate that. If a man enters significantly into a contract with the Ribbono Shel'olam, he must be called something also. He becomes Yisrael, but the Ribbono Shel'olam does not call him Yisrael yet. He waits till Yaakov, which we'll see. But he's got to change the name of Avram, and he does. What does the Ribbono Shel'olam do? Of course, he gives him the bris, which is the sign in flesh of the entire covenant between a man and the Ribbono Shel'olam. That is the Yisui, the sign. Therefore, that finalizes the agreement. Here's the agreement, and here's now the sign of the agreement, actually in the body of mankind. And the second idea is that the Ribbono Shel'olam changes Avram's name. What does he change it to? Until now, Avram was called Avram, Aleph Beis Resh Mem, which means Av, the father of Aram, of Aramenia, means Iraq, means Ur Kasdim. He's only a father. In other words, he was the place where he came from derived their sustenance from the Kedusha of Avram. But that was only a local. It was only a local father or authority or ruler. Now he became Avraham. Forget the Resh, because that remained. But Avraham is Aleph Beis Resh, forget, and Hey Mem. So it's Av Hamoin Goyim. He became the father of a multitude of nations. He now became the father of all mankind. Why? Because if he was going to massacre those Nyanim, that would correct the Bria, right? And who would benefit? All mankind. So therefore, V'nivruchu b'cho, all mankind is blessed for you because you're the one who's going to massacre it. So therefore, Avram did have a name change. That no one was the father or give the hashpah to Aram from where he came. Now he would be the father of all mankind, which means that he would be masakin those tikkunim, and all mankind would benefit. Therefore, and that's the contract, therefore he's called Avraham. This is the idea, why he was called Avraham instead of Avram. Now, not only did that name change, of course, occur to Avram, it also occurred to Sarah, because she was also part of the Tikkun, which means that until now she was called Sarai, my princess, with local. Now it's Sarah, the princess, general, throughout the entire Bria. So therefore, Avram got a name change and Sarah got a name change to reflect the new contract, which means the new conditions or the new significance of the Neshamas, that they have the tikkunim to give down not only to themselves, but throughout the entire Bria. Now, the Rebbeinu Shlom, so you shouldn't think that maybe the Rebbeinu Shlom, he discarded the goyim at that point. Nay, he still gave him another chance, because the Medrash says that when he was going to give him the Torah, the Klal Yisrael, okay, he went around to each nation of the world and offered them the Torah, and each nation rejected it for whatever reason. Okay? He gave one to Yishmael, and they rejected it because Geneva, Lysigna, said, "Oh, we steal, we don't want it." He went to Esav, he said, "What does it say?" So they said to him, what does it say there? So he said, "Lysirtzach, you can't kill." So he said, "Well, I'm sorry, we live on Achera, we live on killing." And so on, each nation he gave it to. And of course, the only nation who accepted it was Klal Yisrael, and they said, "Nasa v'nishma." It wasn't only acceptance, it was a superlative acceptance. The way they did it was incredible. But in any case, what does that mean? It means that you can learn two different shatim, because we don't find that God went around to different nations. What it means is that each nation, perhaps there were leaders in that, those people who were trying to, you know, talk about morality and turning them back to the good, and the nation didn't heed. So therefore that was a chance again for the nation to listen to the right derech. Or what it also could have meant, and this is much more what's more problem, is that the Rebbeinu Shlom at Matan Torah went through every nation and looked at its koichos, how low it was in Tumah. And he saw if he gives them the Torah, would they be able to keep it? So he saw that every nation in the world had degraded themselves in terms of their Tumah, how much they were a representative of Sitra Achram, to such an extent where even if he gave them the Torah, they couldn't get out of the quicksand. They couldn't get out of the mud that they were in. And the only one who was possible was Klal Yisrael. Even though they had gone through 49 levels of Tumah, which they had done in Mitzrayim, but it was possible for Klal Yisrael to do it. And lo and behold, they did. In 49 days, they made an incredible reversal. Just shows you the koich of Klal Yisrael when it comes to the Kedusha. And that's all because of the hashpor of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the 10 Shvatim, the 12 Shvatim, and so on. But the goyim, it was seen ruchni, spiritually, that they couldn't do it. So that's what it means. That he went around to each nation to see if they could be involved in the Torah and the Tikkunim. But unfortunately, they had strayed too far. That was the last chance the goyim had to come back into the fold or to be involved in the Tikkunim. To Masak and the Bria. After that, it was sealed forevermore. That's it. They can no more come back as a nation. They can only come back as individuals if they want to become a ger or a gerus. That's the only. Each person still can do that. Be Masakin. But no more as a nation. Only as individual. Now we begin to see the power of Klal Yisrael. The only nation on earth that can Masakin the Bria is Klal Yisrael. And Tikkun means God coming in the Bria and out of the Bria. If you recall, I taught many shurim before on Tzimtzum. That's what it means. Through the Avodah, you're masaking all the kilkulim and the chesrenus of the Bria. And therefore, you bring the Rebbeinu Shlom back into the Bria. The only ones who can affect the Rebbeinu Shlom that way is the only ones who have their hands on the lever. And the lever, of course, is the Avodah, the mitzvahs, and so on. But what the lever does is it controls the tikkunim. Means, is the Bria back in a stage of kilkul or not? The only ones who have that power are Jews. A goy cannot move the Masak and the Kunim not one billionth of a meter. Because that's not his tafkid. That's the tafkid of Jews. They had that until Avram and perhaps even, and of course even until Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, they can make not one move for the tikkun. Only Klal Yisrael does that. That's why Jews are so awesomely powerful. And that's why the whole history is nothing more than to structure itself to make sure that the Jews have their tikkunim to masakin. It's like everything is It's like a waiter waiting on Klai Yisrael that they should be able to masakin the Bria. So every historical moment, make sure that it is of that kind of a framework, a situation where the tikkunim of Kilkulim and Chesaron will be realized. That's the power of a Jew, which we see once the Rebbe Hashem made the Bris, of course, with Avram and with no other nation. What would be, is that the tachas of the Goyim is to follow the Jews, to allow the Jews to show them the correct derech, to be involved in that tikkun by enabling the Jews to be masak in the Bria. This would be their tafkid. And for that, they would get Olam Haba also, because they would also have helped to masakin it by enabling the Jews to masakin it. So the ones who do the tikkun are the Jews, but the assistance by the Goyim would be their schus to get Olam Haba. So they would get Olam Haba indirectly. Unfortunately, the Goyim, not only don't they assist their Jews, they prevent it, make it impossible for the Jews to do their tikkun. So it wasn't for the fact that the Rebbeinu Shlom himself has to make sure that history will always make sure the Jews will be masakin, because you can't look for the Goyim for assistance. So Rebbeinu Shlom has to counter the negative effects of a Goy and provide the possibility of the Jews being masakin the Bria. So therefore the Goyim killed their own Olam Haba by making it impossible for the Jews to be masakin the Bria. And if it wasn't for the Rebbeinu Shlom that he enables the Jews to be masakin the Bria, then there would be never a tikkun. So the Goyim, of course, have a murdig claim against them in Olam Haba, and that's the whole Gemara Avodah Zarah, that there will be a tremendous debate between Klal Yisrael and the Goyim. And the Goyim will be vanquished, because not only did they not masakin help Klal Yisrael, they prevented Klal Yisrael from bringing in the tikkunim. Therefore, they had no chelik in Olam Haba for those Goyim. But for those Goyim who did help Klal Yisrael, they will takabi in Olam Haba as an appendage to Klal Yisrael, indirectly, because they were an indirect influence on the tikkun of the Bria. Now, this week, I just want to give a brief review of what we had covered last week. It comes out that there are basically three questions, two of which we have dealt with, when we examine really the Jewish philosophical structure, the Hashkofa system. The first idea is, who is the Masakin? Who is that group of individuals which the Rebbeinu Shlom wants that will succeed in tackling the task and overcoming it, and therefore getting Olam Haba? So who is the Masakin? And and until now, I've spoken about exactly what needs tikkun, what needs a correction. But I'll explain that just briefly later. But in any case, so the first question is, who is the Masakin? Who is that group or individuals who have assumed the obligation or responsibility and have entered into an agreement with the Rebbeinu Shlom to do the job that he wants and thereby get Olam Haba? The second question is, what needs tikkun? What is the task? What is the job that the Rebbeinu Shlom has designated for this group to do? What is the tikkun? What is that job? And the third idea is, what is the method to masakin? By what method does one actually correct? These are the three questions. And right now, I'm going to quickly review what we have discovered in terms of who is the masakin. And the second is, what is it that needs tikkun? And in terms of what is the method, I will go after we finish the others, because that, based on that idea, is what the entire idea of Goyim and Jews are, in terms of what is the method. But in any case, we have discovered last week, or we've seen last week, that Yisrael is a concept. The idea of Israel is a concept that is applied to that group of individuals who have assumed the obligation to do what the Rebbeinu Shlom wants. And whoever that group is, that is who Yisrael is. Now, therefore, before the Chet of Adam Rishon, who was Yisrael? Who was Yisrael, the one who would be Masakin? Because whoever is Masakin, whoever corrects the job that has to be done, which has been designated by the Rebbeinu Shlom, they are called the Masakin, they are called Israel. So who was Israel? Israel was Adam Rishon. That was who the name Israel first devolved upon. And what would be Adam Rishon means that Adam Rishon and all men that would come out of Adam Rishon. What would be the tikkun? What needs correction? The answer is tikkun of the chesaron, to correct the deficiency in the universe that was created by the Rebbeinu Shlom. In other words, what was created by the Rebbeinu Shlom was a hester yichudai, a concealment of his unity. Therefore, the tikkun is to memagal yichudai. That's the chesar, the original deficiency. Therefore, before the chet of Adam Rishon, the concept of Yisrael, which is synonymous with the concept of the Masakin, who is the one who's going to correct whatever deficiency is put before them, devolved upon Adam Rishon and all men, and the task or the tikkun itself was to Masakin the Chesar. Now, the concept of Yisrael after the Chet still devolved on all men. In other words, even though Adam Rishon did the Chet, Yisrael was still Adam Rishon and all men. There was no such thing as Jews or Goyim. It was still all men. But now, the tikkun, or that which needed correction, was now of a double nature. The first thing that had to be niskan, or corrected, was the hester, the concealment of the presence of God, which man contributed by doing the chet, because by doing the chet, in effect, he concealed the presence of the God even further. Therefore, he had to undo that concealment. He had to remove the amount he contributed to the original state of Hester in the universe. That's the tikkun of Kilkul. Kilkul is the damage that man did. And the second tikkun that man needed was the original tikkun of Chesar, which is the amount of concealment of God's presence, which God himself had put into the universe in order to give man a task of understanding the nature of the Rebbeinu Shlom. So therefore, after the Chet of Adam Rishon, the concept of Yisrael devolved on still on all men, and the tasks were now two instead of one. The first task was to correct or undo the hester that man contributed to the universe, the hester yichudoi of God that he contributed to the universe as a result of his sin, which is called Kilkul, tikkun of Kilkul. And the second task of man was now the tikkun of Chesaron, which is the original amount of deficiency or the original amount of concealment of God's presence, which God contributed, put into the universe in order to allow man to have a task in which he can labor at and therefore get Olam Haba. Therefore, the concept of Yisrael again devolved on all men still, but now included two tasks, Tikkun of Kilkul and Tikkun of Chesaron. The third idea is that, again, you notice there's a changing concept of Yisrael. It's already changed once. First it started with all men, Tikkun of Chesaron. Now it's all men, Tikkun of Kilkul and Chesaron. It changed the third time, or rather, a second time. And that was that after Avraham Avinu, no more would all men be able to masakin. No more would all men be able to undo the amount of concealment of God's presence that man had contributed to the universe and the Rebbeinu Shlom had contributed. Now only Avraham Avinu and his descendants. And that is really what the nature of a Jew is. In other words, the concept Yisrael, which means that that group of individuals who will assume the responsibility of bringing the presence of the Rebbeinu Shlom into the Bria, where all men know of the knowledge of God, that's the task of man, to recognize the supreme authority of the Rebbeinu Shlom, that task would now be done only by Avram, as I had mentioned last week. And which means that Avram Avinu now has the concept of Yisrael. The idea or the terminology, the term called Israel, now applies only to Avram and to his descendants. No more to the rest of mankind, because they had been not doing anything for 20 generations. So therefore, they were not doing anything in terms of realizing who the Rebbeinu Shlom is. So therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlom gave it to Avraham Avinu because of his work. Therefore, the concept of Yisrael, since Avraham, has now devolved upon Avraham and his descendants, namely the Jews. And the correction, the tikkun, that which needs the task, that which needs to be corrected, is the kilkul, which means the amount of contribution that man has done to the concealment of God's presence as a result of his chatoim, and the original chesaron, which is the amount of hester of God's unity, which had been contributed by the Rebbeinu Shlom himself in order to give man the task in the first place. Therefore, we now see that Yisrael changed in terms of who. It changed twice. One was all men and then became Jews. The original task of man was to masakin the chesaron, and now it became to masakin the chesaron and the kilkul. So this is the changes that had occurred. This I had spoken of actually last week. Now, if you recall, what does Tikkun Chasan and Tikkun of Kilku mean? Or rather, how does one go about it? As a result of man's sin, what he did is he introduced evil, which is the Yetzirah, that Malach which is in charge of all the affairs that try to seduce man into sinning, that influence entered the universe in the form or into the body of man. Before it was a snake and now it became internalized in the body of man. Now man carries around his own evil inclination in his own mind. So therefore the Sitra Achra, which is the Yetzirah, or the Malach HaMavis, whatever you want to call him, now is internally in the physical universe itself. Therefore, one must this was the effect of the Chet of Adam. Therefore, one must remove the evil, or the Yetzirah, and the way you do that is by battling the Yetzirah, and subjugating him, and using him for Kedusha. That's called Kfiyas HaSitra Achra, to subjugate, subdue the Yetzirah, and to remain righteous, and therefore then subjugate the Yetzirah, and he has no more power in terms of his effect. That is the way you are misakin the kilkul, and you misakin the chasan by spreading kedusha. In other words, once you've battled the Yetzirah and you've won over him, you now spread the name of God throughout the entire world, and you promote the belief in God. This is what's called hispashas kedusha. So that's what tikkun kilkul is, and that's what tikkun chasan is. Now, therefore, we see, so far is how the concept Israel changed, and which means who is the Mesakin, because the universe was created for those individuals who would correct the deficiency in the universe, and what the Tikkun was, that also changed. Now, when we say that Israel, of course, is the concept of who can correct the damage and the chasson and the bria, that means that I don't care who it is. I don't care if before the advent of Avram, which means all men, or after the advent of Avram, which means Avram and Jews. Those are obviously the different groups that could do or correct what the Ribbono Shel Olam himself had put into the universe. Basically, it means the Shroshim, which I had mentioned, the Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David. Those are the two main Neshamas, which are involved in two different kinds of activities. And the second, it means Jews, all Jews, which are working in one of those two directions also. So when you talk about who is the one who's Mesakin, who corrects the Hester, or the concealment of the presence of God, you're always talking about one of two individuals, either Mishichus of Ben Yosef, who is involved in correcting the damage to the Bria, the Kilkum, or the Mishichus of Ben David, who's involved in correcting the Chesaron of the Bria. And together, all Israel, all Jews are involved in one or the other. Either they're battling the Yetzirah within the Yetzirah himself, and they're trying to subjugate the Yetzirah, or they're trying to spread the idea of Torah throughout. These are always the idea in terms of what Jews are involved in. That's in terms of the Mesakin. Now, to get to Avraham Avinu, which is where we left off last week. If you recall, Avraham Avinu battled both. Because in the beginning he was in Ur Kasdim, in Ur of the Chaldees, right? And in there his job was to remain at Tzaddik even though all around him was tremendous evil, right? So what is that? That's to battle the Yetzirah and to subdue him and to remain from. Religious, righteous. That's exactly what Avraham did. He was in Ur Kasdim, he refused to let the influence of Chaldea to influence him, right? And he battled and remained at Tzaddik. So therefore, what he's doing there was the Kfiyas Ra, was subjugating the evil in Ur Kasdim. The second job, of course, is once he went to Eretz Yisrael, he was spreading the name of God throughout the entire world. Wherever he went, he would always use it as a opportunity to spread the name of God. This was the whole idea of his Hachnasas Ochem. So therefore, this was the Hispashtis Kedusha, of course, throughout. And this is what the second task which Avraham did. As a result of that, we now come to the idea that the Ribbono Shel Olam decided to make a covenant with Avraham. What was the covenant that the Ribbono Shel Olam made with Avraham? He made an agreement with him. He said, since you are doing the jobs that have to be done, in other words, you are actively engaged in fighting the Yetzirah, being religious even in a non-religious environment, and you also spreading the word of God, I will now make the agreement with you that you are the one, as a result of this tasks that you're doing, you are the ones who will correct the entire situation in the universe. Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlomo made the Bris Ben Abisurim, and that's what it symbolizes, that now Avraham Avinu and he only, and his descendants, can actually engage in repairing the job that was originally put into the universe, which became the task of man. So this is what the Bris Ben Abisurim signifies, that the concept of Yisrael now devolves only upon Avraham and his descendants, which means, remember, what does Yisrael mean? That they are the only ones who can masakin the Bria. Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlomo decided to enter into an agreement where Avraham and his descendants would be the individuals or group of individuals that would do this job and therefore get Olam Haba. So as I said, the concept of Israel, Jew, which actually means Yisrael, actually the concept of Yisrael devolved upon Avraham and his descendants. Now, therefore the Rebbeinu Shlomo says to Avraham, "V'nivruchu b'cha, and in you shall be blessed all the nations of the earth." Why? Because since you are actually correcting the original state, you're bringing God back into the universe, and that is a blessing for the entire universe, and you're the only one who can do it, therefore all nations will be blessed through you, because you're the only one who can do it. So therefore all nations will receive their blessing as a result of your task of bringing God back into the universe. That's why it's v'nivruchu b'cha, all the nations will be blessed in you. Now, the Rebbeinu Shlomo therefore made an agreement with Avraham. What was that agreement? That you and your offspring, you and your offspring, you and your descendants are the ones who will be masakin, correct both deficiencies, right? Which would mean that you will remove the concealment of God's presence and you will reveal the presence of God. That's called Gili Yehudai, of course, which means the revelation of the unity of God. And as a result of that, you will get Olam Haba. And in Olam Haba, what's that? That you will experience the unity of God in the exact amount that you brought Him into the universe. So therefore, that's the agreement. You correct the deficiencies of the universe, and deficiencies being that there is a concealment of my presence. You bring me back into the universe. And as a result of that, in Olam Haba, the Rebbeinu Shlomo will reveal himself to that individual in the exact amount that he revealed God to the universe. It's a measure for a measure. Okay? And this is the agreement that the Rebbeinu Shlomo made with Avraham and to all his descendants after him. In other words, you remove the concealment of kilkul, the original damage, and the concealment of chesaron, which is the first damage. And if you remove the hester, instead you are megal yehuda, you reveal the presence and the unity of God. You will experience that unity that you yourselves reveal in Olam Haba. This was the agreement that the Rebbeinu Shlomo made with Avraham Avinu by Bris Ben Abisurim. That is the significance of the Bris Ben Abisurim. Now, that was the agreement that the Rebbeinu Shlomo made with Avraham. Look at the significance of that agreement. That's what it means. It means that God, the Rebbeinu Shlomo, took away the ability of everybody to do the job that man was created for in the beginning, which is to recognize the supreme authority of God. Now he gave it only to Avraham. Of course, a goy can recognize the supreme authority of God, but nothing happens in the universe as a result. God does not go in or out of the universe as a result of a goy's actions. That's what it means. Only as a result of a Jew's actions. And I had mentioned last week that God still left it open to goyim in terms of they become gerim. If a goy wants to enter that activity that the Jew has, therefore he can become Jewish. This is the way he can become involved. But as a nation, nations can no more assume the entire obligation that the Jews have, only individuals of a particular nation. Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shlomo told Avraham that at that time, at the Bris Ben Abisurim, as I had mentioned previously, that your descendants will be slaves in a land that they do not know, 400 and some odd years, right? Why did the Rebbeinu Shlomo tell that to Avraham? Because when he gave this job to Avraham and he said, you're the only one that can actually correct the situation, the fact that I'm concealed from the universe, okay? What the Rebbeinu Shlomo is telling him, in effect, is that I want not only you to correct it, but your descendants And in a very short while, I want the Mashiach to come. And I had mentioned to you that when the Jews went out of Egypt, had they not done the sin of the eagle, then the Yemoisa Mashiach, the Messianic era, would have started then, not now as we have to wait for it. Therefore, at the time you make an agreement with somebody, you have to spell out all the conditions of the agreement. Since the agreement that God was making with Avram was that you and your descendants can fix all the damage and deficiencies in the universe and therefore usher in the Messianic era, because that's what the Yemoisa Mashiach is. It comes after all the tikkunim have been done. Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shem says, and also your children have to be in Egypt. He didn't name the nation, of course, for such and such amount of years. And as a result of that, the entire tikkun will have been accomplished. And you can get the Yemoisa Mashiach. And the truth is, that's exactly what almost happened, if it wasn't for the chet of the ego. But I had spoken about this in previous shiurim. Now, getting back to Avram, so that's the significance of Bris Ben Absarim. Very important to understand. Most people don't understand the significance of what it was that Rav Hashem did with Avram, and that's really what it was. Now, where do we see that in a profound way in the Chumash, that Rav Hashem made this covenant with Avram, and not only that, that he made the covenant, but also, of course, that he insisted, of course, on having his descendants also as part of the covenant, and so on. The Torah says that the Rebbe Hashem commanded Avram to do the Bris Mila, to have the ritual of circumcision. Right after that, right at the end of it, it says that God finished speaking with Avram. God finished talking with Avram after commanding him the mitzvah of Bris Mila, and it says Vayal Elokim mi'al Avram. And God ascended from upon Avram. That's the literal translation of the Chumash. Now, Chazal asked a question. They say, what do you mean, Vayal Elokim me'al Avram? And God ascended from upon Avram. What do you mean, it sounds like God was on his back. And then after he commanded him the mitzvah of Mila, he went off his back. It sounds like God was riding on top of Avram, because it says he ascended from upon him. It sounds like he was upon him before, which means on top of him, and then he ascended. That's a very unusual lashon. It should say that God ascended next to Avram, or away from Avram. What do you mean he ascended from upon Avram? The lashon distinctly says that God was riding on Avram. That's literally what it means. So Chazal tells us one of the most fundamental principles of all, and that is that from here we learn out that the others, which is Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they are the Merkava, the chariot of God. Okay? Which means, in other words, it's like God rides Avram as like a driver rides a chariot. So therefore, Chazal learned that since it says God ascended from upon Avram, it means that Avram is the chariot of God, the Merkava. Okay? That the others, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and now it's talking about Avram, is the chariot of God. This is the way Chazal call it. What does that mean? What is the significance of the fact that you call a tzaddik or Avram a chariot? What does that mean? Not only that, once we understand what a chariot is, we'll understand some ideas of what Yechezkel, Hanavi, saw in the Ma'aseh Merkava. Remember, there was a whole image, he saw a chariot in the sky, and he saw four wheels and fiery angels and so on. What does all that really mean? Well, we'll go into a little of it, and you'll begin to see what the symbolism of that really conveys. The fundamental structure of the entire universe in terms of what must be. But in any case, right now we see that the Chazal learned out from Vayal Elokim Me'al Avram that Avram is the chariot of God, because it says he ascended from upon Avram, means he got off him. Okay, which means he was on top of him until he ascended. So the question, of course, is what is the significance of the fact that Chazal call Avram Avinu a chariot, a Merkava? Second, what is the significance that the fact that God says he got off Avram after he gave him the mitzvah of Mila? Okay, the second idea. Now, let's go into the Merkava. The ideas in the Merkava are, like I said, are very profound. And they're very important to understand. And they themselves, it's like they are a model of the entire universe, what must go on. Now, the Merkava itself has two fundamental ideas embedded into it from the nature of a chariot. Okay? What is the purpose of a chariot, a Merkava? Let's look at that first. The purpose of a chariot, today you look at it in terms of a car, but in those days they had chariots, right? They had chariots instead of cars or modern weapons of war or whatever. And it was their methods of, that's really the purpose. The purpose of a chariot is what? To convey the driver to his destination point. It's a vehicle. That's what a chariot is. A chariot is a method, a vehicle by which an individual can go from one place to another. That's what a chariot is. Okay? So it's the Merkava, it conveys the driver to his destination. That's what a chariot is. What does that mean? Well, who is the chariot and who is the driver? We see that Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam, is the driver, because Vayal, he's the one who ascended, and Avram is the chariot, right? So we see who the symbolism of who the chariot and who the driver is. What does that mean? If the purpose of a chariot is to bring the driver to his destination, right? What's the purpose then of Avram to do to Ribbono Shel Olam? Is to bring God to his destination. What's the destination of the Ribbono Shel Olam? To come back into the universe. That the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence should be revealed again into the world where it was hidden purposely to give man a task to do. So therefore, the idea of chariot is that the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence should come back into the world, back into creation, to bring God back into the Bria. This is the idea of what the chariot is. Because the chariot conveys the driver to his destination, and the destination of God, of course, is to where he's not, Kaviyochel, because God really is all places. But we do not perceive him in this universe, so therefore it's as if God is not here, so therefore the destination point of God is to come back into this universe, and therefore man recognizes the presence of God throughout all creation. So that is the purpose of Avram, to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam back into the Bria. Okay, that's why Avram is a Merkava. He's a chariot. Because he's the vehicle by which God will ultimately go back into the Bria. Now, when God goes back into the Bria, what does that mean? That means Gilui Yichudo. It means the unity of God is completely revealed throughout the entire universe. So it comes out, again, that chariot is a metaphor for the task of Avram. The task or the purpose of a chariot is again to bring the driver to his point of destination. The task of Avram, metaphorically, is to bring God to his destination from where he is not perceived to be, namely this earth and the entire universe, to bring him back into the universe where we perceive the driver, we perceive the unity or the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore, that Tzaddik is the chariot of God. He's a chariot for God. He is the emtsoi, he is the vehicle, he is the means, the method, by which God is revealed in this world and all creation. That is exactly the relationship between the Tzaddik and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, besides that, what does that convey? So, in other words, we see that the Merkava's purpose, right, is God's destination. That's the purpose of the Merkava. Which means to remove the concealment of God's presence. As a result of the kilkel of man, which is the amount of deficiency that man contributed, and also as a result of the chasarn, because of God's initial deficiency. So therefore, when it says that the chariot brings God to creation, and therefore it's depicted that God is riding a chariot, it means that the task of the chariot or the task of Avram is to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam into the Bria, and as a result of that, the concealment dissipates, is no more. Instead of concealment of God's presence, there is now gilui, a revelation of his presence, which means that the two tikkunim, or the two avodas, have to be done. Which again, first tikkun is to remove the kilkul, to remove the deficiency as a result of man's actions, that's the damage, and to remove the deficiency as a result of God's actions, that he himself originally was deficient in the universe. So therefore the hester as a result of man and the hester as a result of God's actions has to be removed, and it's removed as a result of Avram's actions, and therefore Avram is symbolized as a chariot. That is the first purpose of a chariot, to bring the Ribbono Shel'olam into the Bria. Now, the second idea of chariot is operationally. How does a chariot work? A chariot works by adapting the will of the driver. Chariot has no will of its own. Is that true? Mm-hmm. The chariot responds to the will of the driver. Okay? Therefore, in other words, operationally, a chariot works by responding to the will of the driver, therefore gets to the destination of the driver. What does that mean? Since the chariot is a metaphor for Avram, therefore Avram must adapt the will of God completely, and then he will get it to his destination. Right? So therefore the way the chariot works is by subjugating its will. Of course the chariot has no will, it's an inanimate object. But in terms of, if it could have a will, it would have to subjugate its will to the will of the driver. And then it can get somewhere, because then the driver can lead it. The same idea. Avraham Avinu, who has a will of his own, just like all men, and who has free will, who can initiate whatever they want, they can do whatever they want, have to adopt the will of God, the Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and then they can bring the Ribbono Shel Olam into the Bria. And if you recall, the idea of the adapting the Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam is the essence of the Avodah. The whole task of a man doing a mitzvah means what? That I will not do what I want, I will do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to do. So whose will are you adopting? You're adopting the Ribbono Shel Olam's will. That's the task of man. By adapting the will of God, so God says, since you proclaim that I am the only one in the universe, because you say, I will do your will, therefore I will now get closer to the universe in accordance with your statement. You testify to the unity of God by doing a mitzvah, because that's what you do when every time you do a mitzvah, you testify to his unity. Therefore God responds on his side and he says, I will come back into the universe as a result of your testimony. If you testify to the contrary, that you do a sin which says that I want to do what I want, not what God wants, so what you're really saying is, I'm also a boss, I'm also somebody, I don't have to do what you want, I'm also somebody. So what you're really saying is that God is not the supreme being, because you have a right, you are entitled to do your own will. So therefore what you're saying is that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not supreme, so the Ribbono Shel Olam, as a result of that, removes himself from the Bria. It's mida keneged mida, measure for measure. God subjugates his actions to the actions of man. If man proclaims his unity, God comes into the universe. If man proclaims his own greatness, then God leaves the universe. So therefore, the essence of the work that a man does is to adopt the will of God. And that is a complete testimony that the Ribbono Shel Olam is supreme. Therefore, Avram has to be a chariot, which operationally means that if you want to bring God into the universe, which is what a chariot does, then you also have to work like a chariot. And a chariot only works at the beckoning of its driver. If the driver doesn't make the move to go, the chariot stands still. The same idea, the horses stand still, which drive the chariot. Therefore, you have to act operationally like a chariot, to adopt the will of God, then God moves into the Bria. If you don't adopt the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then of course the chariot doesn't move, and the Ribbono Shel Olam never gets to his destination, which means that the hester, the concealment of God's presence, continues. That's the idea, the two fundamental ideas in the metaphor of the Merkava, the chariot. So when the Ribbono Shel Olam said to Avram, you are the chariot, and he indicated that by saying that he got off him, he was saying to Avram that you can bring me into the universe, which means you can remove all that concealment, that darkness, and you can bring me in, and people will recognize the presence of God. That's the function of a chariot. That's what it's the purpose. And operationally, the way you'll do it is by adapting your will to mine the way a chariot and its horses, thus to the driver. So Rabbi Shimon was telling him two things. That your purpose is to bring me into the universe. That's the purpose. And the method is to adopt my Ratzon. Two messages to Avram. That's the significance of a chariot. So we see that a Merkava is a profound metaphor for the whole purpose of a Jew. And that is that the Jew's purpose now, after Avram, before it was all mankind's purpose, that the whole purpose of the Jew is to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam back into the Bria, and that's what a chariot does. And back into the Bria means to remove both deficiencies, the concealment as a result of man's contribution by his chet, and the concealment as a result of God's contribution, the initial stage of the universe. And the second idea is that how are you going to do this? How are you going to get God back into the universe? Megali Chudoi, by adopting the will of the driver, which means to do his mitzvahs and proclaim his unity, therefore God taka, or in reality, does come back into the universe. That's why Avram is called a Merkava. That's the idea of Merkava, chariot. Now, if we follow it completely, then the Merkava, Chazal say in Cheskel, when he saw the Merkava, that he had four wheels, or four images at the bottom, instead of four wheels. The first wheel, or the wheel, the four wheels, one was a lion, one was an ox, one was a face of a man. One was the face of an ox, the face of a lion, the face of a man, and the face of an eagle. This was the bottom, the wheels of the chariot. Mm-hmm. What are wheels? Those are the wheels, those are the actual support, and they are the ones that move the chariot. That's the essence of the mobility of the chariot. So therefore, just to understand three of them, who is the Shoah, the face of the ox? Who is Shoah symbolized? Mashiach ben Yosef. Now you begin to understand what's going on, because that's one major tikkun. One major task of man is Yosef. Is Yosef, which is symbolized by the ox. Because, Yosef, by Yosef, it says, B'chor Shorei Hodoloi. It says in the end, of the Chumash, right? In Vezoy Sabrocho, that when Moshe blessed each tribe, right? Shevet, on Yosef he says, B'chor Shorei Hodoloi, that the beauty of the ox, the firstborn of his ox, beauty is his. He calls Yosef an ox. That's the animal that symbolizes Yosef. So therefore, Shor on the Merkava means the task of what Yosef has to do, which is to remove the damage or the concealment of God's presence that was contributed by man. Why is Yosef symbolized by an ox? What's the purpose of an ox? An ox works the ground. Plow the earth. Remember what the metaphor by Cain was? What was Cain? Cain was an Oved Adoma. Remember I told you that? Cain was an Oved Adoma. He worked the ground. And I said that was a metaphor for the Mashiach ben Yosef, because the Mashiach ben Yosef works the ground. Why? Because he's got to remove the earth, remove the physicality that man got as a result of his chet. So Shor indicates Mashiach ben Yosef, which indicates the tikkun of ben Yosef, that ben Yosef has to mesakim. Okay, mesakim the kilkel, and the way he does that, of course, is he subjugates the sitra achra. Sitra achro. And the reason why it's symbolized by the shore ox, because an ox works the ground just like we see, works very hard. Just like we see that Cain was an Ivid Adoma. And just like the Indian of Cain was Mashiach ben Yosef, that job, the same idea, the shore on the Merkava, is that's the job of man. There you are, sitting right under the Merkava, the idea of shore. What's the second idea, the second image under the Merkava is the Ari. The lion, we all know the lion is David, Yehuda, Gur Aryeh, right? Yehuda. So the second, so the Ari symbolized the tikkun of Ben David, right? Which is to remove the chesaron, the original deficiency of man. That's the hispashtus of Kedusha, that's the tremendous spreading out or extension of holiness. This is the idea of the Ari, that's the second tikkun that's needed to convey God back into the universe. First tikkun is Ben Yosef, the second tikkun is Ben David, which is symbolized by the lion, the Ari. Why is the lion, why does the Ari, the symbol of Ben David? Because the Ari proclaims majesty and kingship wherever it goes. The lion is the king of the jungle in terms of its incredible, beautiful appearance. It looks like a melech. So therefore, the idea of Malchus is symbolized by a lion. So that the task of the Mashiach ben David is to proclaim the kingship of God throughout the Bria. The Malchus of the Rebbe Hashem throughout the Bria. To spread the Kedusha, which is the kingship of God, throughout the Bria. You see. So therefore, Shor represents Ben Yosef, which is to work the ground, to remove the Sitra Achra, to subjugate it. And the lion is to spread, the lion roams wherever he goes, right? He roams through Africa as a king. His Spashtus of Kedusha, to spread out royalty throughout the land, just like the lion wanders throughout the land. The lion is royalty. That's why these two animals symbolize Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef. Or they symbolize the two different kinds of jobs that Jews have to do. That's why God made a lion and made an ox, not the reverse. Mm-hmm. Not that since you have an ox that works on the ground and a lion that goes around like a king, therefore God used these as symbols for the Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef. No. Because two tikkunim are needed, that means working on the ground, which means removing evil out of the body of man, and to proclaim majesty throughout. Therefore, an animal like the lion and the ox were created, reversed. That's where the Torah works. They were created as animals representing those two tasks of the Jew. The third image was the image of Adam, was the face of a man. What does that mean? Because who does those two tikkunim? Who is the instrument, the one who has free will, who has to do these two tasks? Man. That's who has to do it. So therefore the chariot will move as a result of man. So man doing the tikkun of Shor, Ben Yosef, and the tikkun of the Ari, Ben David, that is what moves the chariot, because those are the wheels. That is what moves the chariot and conveys the Ribbono Shel into the Bria. And whose face do you think was on the chariot? Whose? It says the face of a man. Mm-hmm. Whose face was that? It was Yaakov. Yeah. Why was it Yaakov? Chazal say that Yaakov had the beauty of Adam Rishon. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, whose face was supposed to be originally on the Merkava? Adam Rishon. Right? Because he was the original one who had the term Yisrael. After he lost it, who got it? Who was the one who was called Yisrael finally? Yaakov. So therefore, Chazal and Merames, by telling you that Yaakov has the beauty of Adam Rishon, which means that Yaakov finally internalized, or in him gelled the concept of Yisrael, and therefore he was called Yisrael, right? From Adam Rishon. That's why he looked similar to Adam, because he took over what Adam should have done. He became Yisrael. So therefore, the face of the Merkava is no more Adam, it's Yaakov Avinu. And the Chazal say that, how we know it's Yaakov Avinu? Because by the Sulam, when the angels were going up by the ladder, when Yaakov had a dream, after he went out from Be'er Sheva, and he was going to Choron, he slept and he had a dream, the ladder, the Jacob's ladder, right? And he saw angels going up and down, and God was standing on the side. So the idea is, to the Chazal and Chulin say, Masechta Chulin, that the angels were going up and they looked at the Dmus, the image of Yaakov, up in the Mala, which means in the Merkava, and then they came down and they saw him sleeping on the ground. They saw him, you know, so they saw Yaakov in both places, the image of Yaakov. So therefore Chazal learned that the image of Merkava was Yaakov, right? And again, the reason why it is Yaakov is because since Yaakov now has the concept of Israel, no more Adam who had it before, therefore Yaakov looked like Adam, or he had the shufra of the Adam, the beauty of Adam, yet the image was Yaakov because now he was Israel. And what is the concept or the definition of Israel? Those group of individuals who can do the tikkunim, Ben Yosef or Ben David, who can correct both deficiencies, the deficiency of the Hester caused by man, and the deficiency or the Hester, the deficiency caused by God. Those are the two tasks of a Jew.
which is the tasks of Yisrael. And since Yaakov is Yisrael, he is the image of man. So therefore, we see that the Merkava is literally the metaphor that says everything about the structure of the Bria. It says how God gets into the Bria, which automatically tells us what is the purpose of man to bring God to the Bria, right? And it tells us that there is God is concealed from the universe, or else God wouldn't have to get to the Bria. So it tells us the state of the universe, which is an absence of the presence of God. It tells us the purpose of man, or Yaakov, or Yisrael, to bring God into the Bria, right? It tells us how, by the two tikkunim, you have to occupy yourself with removing the Yetzirah and then spreading holiness, right? It tells us that Yisrael is the one who does that, and who's the one? It's Yaakov. And it tells us the way you do it is by adapting the will of the driver, right? That's the way a chariot works. Now you see why the chariot is such a fundamental idea in the vision of Yechezkel. Why Yisrael Merkava? Because what he was looking at was a metaphor that represents the entire structure, the fundamental structure of the whole Bria. This is the idea of the Merkava. And why was it said after the Bris? Because that was the agreement. What was the agreement that the Rabbeinu Shlom made with Avram? What was the agreement that he made with him? He said that you are the one who's going to do those two tikkunim. You are the ones who are going to bring God's presence and remove both kinds of hesters. The hester contributed by man and the hester contributed by God. You are the one. So if you're the one, then what are you? You are a chariot. No, it says Vayal Kim Yal Avram. God designated Avram to be a chariot after the Bris, because that's exactly what the covenant was, the agreement. You are going to be the chariot. What is the chariot? The individual who will take God and bring him into the Bria. That's exactly what the chariot is. That's why at that point in time, the Rebbeinu Shlom told them, "You are the chariot. You have now become the Merkava for the entire Bria. You and of course all your descendants." After you. Therefore, what we see so far is that the idea of Merkava coming after the Bris is really a metaphoric statement of the entire agreement. And that's why Itaka comes after, the idea of the Bris. So therefore we see that the Rabbeinu Shlom essentially made a new agreement with Avram, that from now on he and his descendants would be the ones who are going to bring the Tikkun, which means they are going to bring the Rabbeinu Shlom back into the Bria and no one else. It's important to note that in the Pasuk, where it says that Avram became a Merkava, the name that the Rabbeinu Shlom uses to describe himself is Elohim, which is the Rabbeinu Shlom in his role as a judge. This means that Avram Avinu, he merited to become a Merkava by Schus, because of merit. He earned it as a result of his Avodas. It was not given to him freely. That's why the appellation is Elohim, the Midas Hadin, the Rabbeinu Shlom in his attribute as a judge. Avram earned it. Therefore, he and his descendants now become the true Mesaknin of the entire Bria.